Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to From Pain to Purpose Podcast with your host, Dr. Ava Eagle Brown, on Bashani Radio in New York City. Always talking about everything? Recycle your pain to live your best life. Listen on the Bashani app and syndicated worldwide on every platform where podcasts are played. Sponsored by themangogirl.com with skincare products that will have you glow from head to toe. Go to themangogirl.com.
This is Dr. Ava Eagle Brown with Pain to Purpose live on Bashani Radio, coming to you from New York City, and we're always talking about everything. Today, I want to talk to you about an incident in my life, actually, that changed my entire direction. Something that I never expected. I think no one expects something like this. Something that has left me scars. No matter how I heal, there are scars. It's one of those accidents you kind of have, and it literally has left you with that massive scar, like an open heart surgery, that although you're healed on the inside, that scar just never goes away. And as a life coach and, you know, a speaker and, you know, somebody who actually believe in a lot of healing and all of that, I really can be honest and vulnerable about it and be open with you and say, yes, I have really good days, but on the odd occasion, this still hurts. And very often when we talk about pain, you know, I see people in my space, you know, and we try to put on this facade that, oh, I'm over it. Oh, I'm good. And you know what? For the most part, we're often really good. But when these kind of things happen to you, there's no way that it doesn't occasionally impact you. And today I want to talk about one of the hardest moments of my life. Now, some of you listening are thinking, let me just fix up on my chair here because this girl has shared so many things. I can't imagine what else could be hard. Because everything you've shared so far, Ava Brown, I can hear some of you saying, it's hard. But I guarantee you're not prepared for this, especially if you haven't read my book. So it was back in Jamaica, and a friend of mine had come to stay with me for the day. She was having some relationship problems. And, you know, as you do your girlfriend, you actually, you know, in Jamaica, I don't know about you guys where you are, but you call her over, you cook for her, you try to just distract her. And that's what I did. She was having a bad time. And I remember the day I actually, you know, made her ackee and saltfish. No, that's not true. It was curry chicken and dumpling. Yeah, that's what it was. And she loved curry chicken and dumpling. And we made her, and she spent the day. And I was taking her back home, took her back to her house. And I was on my way back to my home. And I was on the phone to a friend. My daughter was in the car. She was a baby. She was in her car seat. And it was what we call dusk in Jamaica. It was dawn. It was, you know, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock that time. And I drove home and I'm on the phone. And where we lived, it was a new house we just built in a new area. So there were not lots of houses. There was the mayor and ourselves and some other houses being built by, you know, returning residents. And around the corner, there were some other houses, but it was a developing area. And at the front of her house was a tree, like a shrub. And it was on a slope, so you drove down onto the garage, and the house is there. And I remember driving down and being on the phone with my friend. And the only thing I know and I recall is that as I drove down the slope onto the garage, onto the drive, of course, it's Jamaica. It's sunny. It's hot. So it's humid. You have your window cracked or down. As I drove onto the drive, the only thing I know out of nowhere, like, because you don't expect it out of nowhere, I just felt this gun to my ear temple. And I just saw somebody did shh like that. And before I know it, there was so much action. There were four people and there were four men. And they literally pressed my phone and turned it off, the one to my right. And it literally disconnected the call and opened the door and ushered me out. And one of them took my daughter in her car seat, and she was sleeping, ushered us out. Because I don't know if you know, there are some children, the moment you go into a car and start driving, they fall asleep. That was my daughter. And in Jamaica, we have grills, burglar bars, so grills. And I remember standing up with a gun to my head and several gunmen behind me. And I opened the grill at gunpoint. And I went inside, and two of them asked me for my bank card, and they left and they went in their car that they came in, which, by the way, I don't even know where it was because I didn't see it. And they sped off, and the other two were there. And my daughter was put to lay on the sofa. I can remember the sofa now. It was a gray fabric, a gray sofa. It was gray and all kind of colors. And they put her in there, and one was with my daughter, and the other one, and I know his name, and it almost came out of my mouth, and he ushered me to my room. He's guided me to my room, and I went into my room, and he ransacked, you know, some of the furniture, and he kind of started asking me all kind of questions, and it was all a blur, and everything was happening so fast. I didn't make sense, and I remember him saying that you're not like they say you are, and I'm saying, who say? And he started calling names. And in that moment, all I could think of is, I'm going to die. There is no way I'm going to live through this. Like, I'm not going to live. And I was so confused. It felt like a bad dream and everything. And I remember the two that left went to the bank. They went to the ATM machine. And one was outside with my daughter. And the other one's in the room. And I remember him telling me to get on the bed. And the next thing I know, I remember saying to him, I have HIV. And I don't know where that came from, but I'm thinking that if I have HIV, you know, he's not going to touch me. He's not going to bother. Like, he's not going to do me anything. You know, he'd be scared. And he said, nah, a girl like you, you know, by this time I had a really good job. We're living a good life. Life was good. And he basically said, this is not verbatim, I'm summarizing that, nah, a girl like you, nah, you won't have HIV, you're fine. And what happened next was one of the hardest things I've ever had to endure. There are moments when I talk about it and I try to pace it quickly, and the other times when I talk about it and I cry, and, you know, it evoked different emotions from me whenever I deal with it. But the part that really got me the worst was while he was there literally violating me, my daughter woke up and walked right into my room, because that's what she'd have done when she woke up. And I remember him stopping talking to her or whatever, and he stroked her face and he asked her how old she was. And I remember I said, no, just take me. Just basically, this is me summarizing, just take me. Because in my head, I just don't want you to touch my daughter. And I didn't care what they did to me, just don't touch my child. And I remember, I don't know why my daughter lied, but she lied about her age. And I remember him saying to her, as he kind of went around like he was just manic in the room, he paused and he was manic. And I remember him saying to her that had she been 1 year older, so there seemed to have been an age, you know, that age range in which she was palatable. And I remember my daughter stood there, and I kind of just say, you know, I just wanted her to go. Just go. Just let me get over with this real quickly. Just go. And as I was violated, as I was being violated, I was just glad that she was not harmed and she wasn't touched. And when it was done, no, it wasn't done actually. In the middle of that, my phone rang. No, their phone rang. And it was the guys who were at the cash point. And they needed to get my PIN number. So while I was being violated, I had to be telling somebody my PIN number. And I never forget, it was 2428. I never forget. And I gave them my PIN number. So I'm being violated. I'm giving my PIN number. I'm under a lot of stress. I'm worried about my daughter, my whole brain. My body was just in this state of, I don't even know. It was just frozen almost. I think I was just in autopilot. It was like I was dead. And I remember when it was done, you know, they ushered me to my car because they now had no car to get away in. And I was in autopilot. Even though I'm talking about it, I've just gone into this autopilot state. Like genuinely just gone into autopilot. Like, okay. And I remember going in my car with a gun on me. And one of them sat in the front seat. My daughter in her seat in the back. And one of them with a gun on her. So there were two guns, two men, me and my daughter. And they're telling me that I need to drive. And they're going to instruct me. And they're going to tell me where I need to drive. And I thought, this is going to be it. I'm going to die. And it was in the same time that women were being beheaded in the Middle East. So for me, like, this is it. I'm going to be killed. I'm done. And I remember driving and seeing police. And here's the crazy part, right? I was always being pulled over by the police. At the time, I was driving a 4x4. I was always being pulled over by the police. I kind of had a little road rage. I was in sales. So I was always, you know, hurrying somewhere. And that night, I'm like, I was there and I was like, okay, the police are going to pull me over tonight because that's normal. And I remember driving and parts of me wanted to just drive the car into the police, you know, into the police car to draw their attention to me. And I thought, no, Ava, that's very stupid. Because one, you don't know who these men are. You don't know who sent them. You don't know if they know the police officer. You just don't know. It's stupid. So I decided against doing that. And I was just praying that the police would have stopped me. Well, you know those times when the day when you really need that lock, your lock runs out? Mine ran out. And I drove through and continued. And I remember they drove to this beach in Jamaica, in Montego Bay, and I drove them onto the beach. And when I drove onto the beach, they needed to join for it. They needed to meet up with the others that went to the cash point. And where I was taken to was not far from the cash point. And so as I was there, I thought, yep, this is it. They're going to kill us. They're going to throw it into the sea because we're right beside the sea and we're going to be dead. We're going to be dead. I am actually, as I'm talking to you, I've put myself almost like I'm not talking about myself. I'm outside of this situation. I'm narrating. That's how it feels to me right now because that's how I cope with it. And I remember thinking, we're going to die. This is it. And I said to myself, at least my daughter and I died together. I remember thinking that. At least we're going to die together. That was a consolation. I don't know. That was my consolation. At least we died together. And I remember they ran out of credit on their phone. So they were pay as you go. And I was working for the telephone company. So I had credit all the time. And they borrowed my phone to call the others to tell them where they were. And when they came, I was like, Jesus, this is it. Like, yep, I'm dead now. And I remember they came out of the car and gave me a warning. And what happens next? You're going to have to learn. When we take a break, I'll be back. So they gave me a warning and they told me to pack up and leave Jamaica. And that life was messed up. And they fired a shot in the air and sped off. And even after that happened, I just kind of sat there wondering, am I still alive? Did they not kill me? Am I sure I'm still here? And I remember driving to the police station as quickly as I could. I just drove. I just drove. And I went to the police station. And life happened so quickly after that. Like, so many things happened. And I literally went to the house. I mean, they took me to a, I went into a hotel. I was living in a hotel for a little bit. Then I went to the US to stay with my cousin and came back into my house. And I thought it was a one-off. Got a security guard, come and literally stay in my physical house. And I remember I was on the phone to my same friend who had cooked for the day when this happened the first time. And my sister was working at the airport. And I remember I was on the phone to my friend. The security's in the living room, front room. And I don't know, I kind of heard like they was walking on the roof, like, you know, their footsteps on the roof. I'm thinking, because after what happened to me, I kind of felt like I was going mad. Can I just be real? So in my head, I'm hearing footprints on the roof, but probably it's in my head. I'm not so sure. Probably I'm just being paranoid. Probably I'm just being scared. And somehow I said to myself, no, I want to go back to something because I missed something. When this thing happened to me, right, I had called my sister. I don't know how I managed to. My sister was working at the airport and I told her not to come home. Do not come home the first time. Don't come home. I literally said, don't come home. I don't even remember how at this stage, how I got to call her, but somehow I got the message to her, do not come home. I think I called her or something. And so this second time that we're home, me, my sister, and my daughter, we're all in the same bed because my husband and I are broken up. And we're in the same bed because everybody's scared. So we're not sleeping in the house in our individual rooms. We're in one bed. And I literally pulled the blind, the curtain, and a gun, and my eyes made four. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. By this time, the security guard is obviously fast asleep. And I remember I devised a plan with a friend of mine, and I did what the plan was. And so by virtue of that, we were saved. And I remember getting up and thought, nah, I can't do this anymore. And I got up and moved, literally moved. You know, I'm doing a poetry book now that's called 38 Places I Laid My Head. I've moved 38 times in my lifetime. Like, your childhood can just impact your entire journey. Because I moved a lot in my life. And at that point, I had just settled. I'd been recently, I mean, married a few years, settled, built our own house. We built our own house from scratch, bought land. I was doing okay. Life was good. And I remember moving to another parish near to my mom's. And can I just go back? The day that this happened to me, my living helper, we had a living help. And that day she suddenly needed to go on a break. She needed to go home to her son. Her son was sick. It was so sudden. And I remember not thinking anything of it. I mean, you know, and I remember moving and took her back to come and live with us because she was our living help. And I remember staying in the new place we moved to live in. I remember police would come. I had police friends and they would come and they would flash the light any time of the night. I need to be alert. And I think I had a breakdown. I think I genuinely had a breakdown. I couldn't sleep. 6 o'clock couldn't catch me on the road. Every time I'm in my car, I think there's somebody in the back. I was having a nervous breakdown. Even as I talk about this now, sometimes I don't even know. Like, if I'm to sit down and chronologically list the things I've been through, like, God knows from my deepest heart, I don't know how I'm still sane. I don't even, am I still sane? I am saying, but I don't know how I'm still saying. I just think God's grace and mercy, like, I must be kept and preserved for something special. Like, there's got to be a reason. Like, every day I say, God, you've got to have saved me for a reason, because the things I've been through, like, I mean, people go through stuff every day, and I know that. The closest thing I equate some of my life to is a book that I read by Cupcake Brown called Call a Piece of Cake by Cupcake Brown. And even in that, I'm not belittling her story and I'm not trivializing because it was hard. But yeah, if I were to sit down and list the things I've been through, No. And actually, I try not to think about them, because if you think of them and they start piling up, you go mad. Like, there are a lot. You know, there's a lot of them. And I remember moving house, and the police would come, and I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I was literally, I could feel things crawling in my brain, like in my head. I could feel like I was losing my mind. I felt like I was having a breakdown. So my auntie, I was then studying for my first degree, and my auntie, I was meant to come to the UK, and my auntie invited me up and I had some exams. So when I came to the UK, and whilst I was here, my aunties, I was then a trained teacher, but not working in teaching anymore. I was doing telecoms. And my mom said, you know, my auntie said, you know, try to come and live here. And I was like, no, had a good life in Jamaica. And I moved. I came to the UK on holiday. She took me to a teaching agency and went back to Jamaica. Thought nothing of it. Just went back to my regular life. And I was on Spurtry Hill. This is a really tall hill in Jamaica. And it was about a week or so after, and I got a phone call. Literally. Sometimes your destiny is already written for you. I mean, your destiny is always written for you. And I got this phone call. Now, needless to say, I have not been teaching for a while. Got this phone call. And I stood on the hill, which I don't like. I actually hate this hill. Pulled my car over on it. It was a call from England. And it was a head teacher calling me. She's from Portland. And I remember her name even now. And she interviewed me on that hill, a hill that I hate. Sometimes God takes you on the things that you are most afraid of to strengthen you. And I'm standing on this hill, really, really scared, doing an interview that took me by surprise. Talking about moving to a country that everything was so chaotic in my head. Everything's happening like I'm being pulled and tugged and pushed, and everything was crazy. Have you ever felt like that in your life? And I went into autopilot. I'm able to go into what I now call autopilot. And I just went into autopilot. I did the interview and I got the job. I got the job. And I'm thinking, what did I just do? Have you ever had those moments? Like, what did I just do? And I remember feeling excited, not sure how to feel. And then I had like 3 weeks to sort my life out. Like, literally within a month, I should be in England. This is like, I think in the August. And the rest of it, I don't even know what to explain. Everything just happened like that. Boom, 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 boom. It was just autopilot, left, right. I just kept moving to where it was going. I was just like this robot, just moving. And then I ended up in the UK. And I'm laughing about it, but I remember the day when we're meant to go for our visa, to do the embassy visa, because the agency did all of that for you. I remember saying that I actually can't come because it was raining. And I remember the lady said to me, you want to go to the UK? And in the UK, it rains all the time. So what is this little rain? What is this little rain? And I remember sitting there thinking, when I was in the UK, I felt safe. So, okay. But I didn't know enough about the place. I'd only come here for 2 weeks. I don't know the place. Had a good home in Jamaica. We owned it. Had a very nice car. I just imported a Honda Accord from Japan. And I was driving a Honda CR-V for work. And my Accord was for weekends, 2.0 engine, or 3.0, I think it was, can't remember now. And I was like, I'm not sure. And then I literally just tossed between, am I going to go? I'm going to feel safer. I'm still feeling sore here. I'm having a nervous breakdown. My family is not together. I felt confused as hell. And I had no guidance. I had nobody to go to. I had no family member I could turn to who could guide me. I was on my own. And I remember just feeling like, what am I doing? And genuinely, I just ended up in England. And I know that sounds stupid, but I was in autopilot. I literally, you ever go through one of those moments in your life when you're just trying to find rescue? That you are being ejected from your own DNA, I call it. Like, the place you've grown, I've never thought of migrating. I've never wanted to migrate. As a matter of fact, even today, as I think about it, UK in my head is, I love the UK. It's amazing, but it's not home in my heart. I don't get to see my family enough. There are nieces and nephews I have, I've never met. My children grew up with my mom and their aunties and their uncles, not because I chose to, because somebody messed around in my life and made a decision that then triggered me to try and save my sanity. And whilst there are a lot of things that have been great about living in Europe, at this age, single, you start thinking about where you're going to end up, what really matters. I miss seeing my grandmother, my mom, my sisters. I don't get to see them as much. I don't get to have that family support. Those Sunday dinners, those holidays. And then there are parts of me that would love to just undo it and ask myself, what decision would I have made if I were to do the same thing again? I would have probably stayed. But I never know. And so sometimes in your life, there are situations that come and they really disrupt the fabric of who you are and what you become. And crime can do that to you. Imagine being raped at gunpoint. You can't, even till today, I don't have the answers. I don't know who, I don't know why. I remember going to do an ID parade and I ran away because there was no two-way mirror. I was too terrified. What if they caught, what if I identified the wrong person? So even till today, that chapter is open. Don't know what happened. Was I just unlucky? Did somebody arrange it? Did I attract it? What happened? I don't know. So there are two things in my life I don't know. I don't know who's my real dad. And I don't know who ordered that hit on my life. But what I do know is that I'm here for a purpose. What I do know is that that could have killed me. What I do know is I made a choice that, and it's not easy. I'm not sitting here making you think that, oh, it just happened. No. There are days when I cry. At the tail end of this, I'm just struggling to not swell up because there's so many emotions. The what ifs. What if I'd stayed in Jamaica? I got a call on Sunday. My mom fell down and had to be rushed to the hospital. I can't just jump in my car and go there. I have a sister who... a sister who died, and I live with that guilt sometimes. It's my fault because she lives with me. And because I migrated, she had to move. And the rest of it, I don't want to talk about, but she got herself in trouble. And that led to her dying. And sometimes I feel guilty. Because if I'd stayed, she wouldn't have gone wayward. And that's why pain is something that we have to find ways of releasing. My sister got in the wrong crowd. never came out, never recovered. And so, whilst being held up at gunpoint meant that I could escape, and I got my life is still spared and saved. In theory, cost it took hers. And sometimes, like I said at the beginning, sometimes these scars, they heal, but these tears heal, but they leave scars. And you have good days and bad days. What in your life, what has happened in your life that's left you scarred? What has happened in your life that on some days when you think about it, you go into autopilot. On days when you think about it, it leaves you like it's left me. I want to challenge you to find that thing in your life that's caused you pain, that sends you into autopilot, and really find a way to write how it makes you feel. Be honest with yourself, because sometimes by owning how something makes you feel is one of the ways of dealing with that pain. Like I promised you guys from the very beginning, it's going to be a very honest, raw, and open conversation. So I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for listening. That's heavy. And if anything from here impacted you, affected you, please do find organizations in your city, in your town that can help. And if you can't find any, please inbox us. We don't want anybody to suffer in silence. Until next time, it's Dr. Ava Eagle Brown, and you're listening to Bashani Radio Network. I'm here with Pain to Purpose. And like I said, it's a show that's focused on how people recycle their pain and start living their best life.
Welcome to From Pain to Purpose Podcast with your host, Dr. Ava Eagle Brown, on Bashani Radio in New York City. Always talking about everything? Recycle your pain to live your best life. Listen on the Bashani app and syndicated worldwide on every platform where podcasts are played. Sponsored by themangogirl.com with skincare products that will have you glow from head to toe. Go to themangogirl.com.
Queens, the Bronx, Stat, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcasts. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.